The Srimad Bhagavatam is the literary incarnation of God, and it is compiled by Srila Vyasadeva, the incarnation of God. It is meant for the ultimate good of all people. It is all successful, all blissful, and all perfect. Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu declared that Srimad Bhagavatam is the spotless sound representation of all Vedic knowledge and history. There are selected histories of great devotees who are in direct contact with the personality of God. Srimad Bhagavatam is the literary incarnation of Lord Sri Krishna and is therefore non-different from Him. Srimad Bhagavatam should be worshipped as respectfully as we worship the Lord. Thereby we can derive the ultimate blessings of the Lord. Through its careful and patient study, as God is all light, all bliss and all perfection, so also is Srimad Bhagavatam. We can have all the transcendental light of the Sri Supreme Brahman, Sri Krishna, from the recitation of Srimad Bhagavatam, provided it is received through the medium of the transparent spiritual master. Lord Chaitanya's private secretary, Srila Swarup Damodar Goswami, advised all intending visitors who came to see the Lord of Puri to make a study of the Bhagavatam from the person Bhagavatam. Person Bhagavatam is a self-realized bona fide spiritual master, and through him only one can understand the lessons of Bhagavatam in order to receive the desired result. One can derive from the study of the Bhagavatam all benefits that are possible to be derived from the personal presence of the Lord. It carries with it all the transcendental blessings of Lord Sri Krishna that we can expect from his personal contact. Idam Bhagavatam Nama Puranam Brahma Samtam Utama Shloka Charitam Chakara Bhagavan Rishi Nisresya Chasya Lokasya Danyam Svasya Nenam Mahat. The Srimad Bhagavatam is the literary incarnation of God, and it is compiled by Srila Vyasadeva, the incarnation of God. It is meant for the ultimate good of all people, and it is all successful, all blissful, and all perfect. Oma jnana timarandasya, jnana jnana salakaya, chakshuro militam vina tasmaya shri gurave nama, sri chaitanya manam vistam chapitam vina bhutale, svayam rupa gudamayam datati sambhadantikam, sri krishna chaitanya prabhu nityananda, Sri Adaita Gadara Shiva Sri Gauravakarindam. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So this Srimad Bhagavatam is the ripened fruit of all Vedic knowledge. It has appeared just after the departure of Lord Krishna to his own abode. So actually, when Krishna went back to Godhead, he left behind the Srimad Bhagavatam because he knew that in this age of Kali, people are very unfortunate. They're very degraded. They're very miserable. Very miserable existence. They're unlucky. Very unlucky to be born in such a demonic environment. They have no good stamina of life. And they are also always disturbed by some kind of anxieties. In this age is the age of anxiety, the age of Kali, the age of quarrel, hypocrisy, where the predominance is cheating and getting cheated, and where people will quarrel over the most trifle thing. All in all, it's a very mental age. Everyone is going around on the physical and mental platform. So the great sages of Namasharanya, Sutta Goswami is speaking, they could understand that how unfortunate Kali Yuga, people in Kali Yuga are. They could see that these people are really going to suffer like no other age. This is the bottom of the barrel of material existence. Kali Yuga is the worst time that you can be around. And Prabhupada said, don't think only this lifetime. You're going to be born into it again and again and again. The Prabhupada said at the end of Kali Yuga, people will have children so they can eat them for Sunday dinner. That will be one of the delicacies of the age. So you can eat your own children. It's even begun, actually. There are restaurants in California that serve human or fetus for dinner. So it's not something which won't happen. So there are, if we look around, we'll see throughout the world there's rampant disease, famine, fighting, quarrel, anxiety. So these are all the weapons of Durga, Maya. She is there to chastise the living entities so that they may become awakened in their pursuit of completeness. Because actually, everyone is trying to be complete. The whole emphasis of life is how to find some completeness, isn't it? We want complete knowledge. We want complete happiness. We want complete wealth. We want to be a complete person. And everyone feels very inadequate, isn't it? We all feel very inadequate because we're not complete. We're actually very incomplete. So therefore, it's a natural, just like a magnet metal is attracted to a magnet. It's natural attraction to be attracted to the complete. We can see this. It's a logical, scientific philosophy. In this world, we're naturally attracted to people who are better than us, isn't it? It's a natural attraction. If someone is more beautiful than us, we want to be in their association. If they're more famous than us, we want to be in their association. Even in Krishna consciousness, devotees want to associate with the best. They don't want to associate with the worst. You know, you don't want to, if you want to aspire, then you want to try and associate someone who's more complete in his spiritual life, isn't it? You don't look for someone who's more incomplete than you are. So you are incomplete and you're looking for the complete. In the material world, that aspiration, unfortunately, because consciousness is manifested through matter, therefore we think that there's some way of creating completeness within the incomplete. Because matter itself is not complete. It's not actually complete because to be complete, it needs to have eternality. It needs to have, substance. We see that it's very insubstantial because it's shifting. Matter is always shifting. So we can never predict, just like I may be very beautiful now, but what about 80 years down the road? I'm not going to be so beautiful. Well, I won't be around. But anyway, that's a sign of incompleteness. That I want to, within the shifting of matter, we want to create some sort of substantial existence, isn't it? Everybody wants to be, just like everybody likes to be important. Nobody likes to be insignificant. We all like to be important. We all like to feel that we've achieved something, isn't it, in life. That's why people go through the mid-crisis. Around 40-ish, they begin to think, hey, what have I done? I haven't achieved anything. All I'm doing is I'm getting old, more wrinkly, it's getting harder to digest, harder to walk, and all these incompleteness comes in. So this negativity of the material world is actually there to awaken our consciousness. It's there to, if you like, keep sticking the needles into us. Just like a child when it touches fire, it won't go back again to touch the fire. So the thing is that in the material world, we are constantly reminded of our very inadequate relationship with matter. But still we are insisting on trying to make some adjustment. We try to make so many adjustments, and yet our heart is always vacant. Even Vyasadeva, who wrote all the Vedas, he was still feeling a vacancy. He was still feeling a vacancy, even after writing all, compiling, even the Mahabharata. He wrote all the Itihasis, the histories. He wrote so many things. He dealt with all the subjects of Dharma, Artha, Karma, Moksha. But he had not sufficiently glorified the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna.
He had not actually glorified Krishna. And if you read the Vedas, you'll find that Krishna's in there, but he's not very transparent. Or translucent. Transparent. Translucent is similar. Is it? Similar kind of word. So anyway, you can't just... many people, Max Muller, so many people have read the Vedas. They didn't find Krishna. Because Krishna is not so easy to find. He's actually very, very difficult. He reserves the right to be known. Not that he is simply achievable by reading books or by any type of what we call scholarly acquisition. Krishna cannot be approached by karma or jnana. So any type of jnani, they cannot approach Krishna. They can come and near Krishna. But the thing is that Prabhupada is explaining here that only by getting the mercy of the devotees of Krishna, because Bhagavatam has to be studied by the person Bhagavat. The person Bhagavat means one who is a devotee, a lover of Krishna. They can reveal Krishna. Therefore, Vyasadeva had to take shelter of Narada Muni, because Narada Muni is a pure, unalloyed devotee of Krishna. Therefore, Narada Muni could reveal Krishna. And then, by revealing Krishna to Vyasadeva, Vyasadeva immediately was able to sing the Srimad Bhagavatam. So, this is not, the Srimad Bhagavatam is not some sort of compilation of stories or books or some sort of philosophical treatise or something like that. It's actually, it is the Supreme Personality of Godhead revealed through Shastra. In other words, this is the ripened fruit. It is the nectar of immortality of the Vedic knowledge. So the Srimad Bhagavatam is considered to be the spotless Purana. Spotless means it is not adulterated by any type of karma or jnanic influence. There's no contamination of that type. So the stories of Srimad Bhagavatam, you will not find any instruction in the Bhagavatam that you should take up karmic activities or that you should take up the search for jnana. You see? It will always be telling you to approach the Supreme Personality of God. Whether you approach Him, of course, in the beginning, because for the most those who are more materialistic-minded, therefore it tells you to approach the universal form of the Lord, or to approach the Paramatma, so as that you can actually move gradually towards the Supreme Personality of God, Krishna. So this Bhagavad Purana is as brilliant as the sun, because it is absolute truth. It is as Prabhupada calls it, axiomatic truth. Axiomatic means it is you cannot discuss it in the sense of trying to understand it through your deliberation or through some sort of mundane facility. It is actually coming from the spiritual plane. Therefore, whether you understand it or don't understand it, doesn't mean a fig. That's not what's important. What's important in the Srimad Bhagavatam is that you fall in love with Krishna. The Srimad Bhagavatam is there to teach you how to love Krishna. That is the essence of Srimad Bhagavatam. So therefore, all of this discussions in the Srimad Bhagavatam, they are all there just to increase your appetite for associating with the Supreme Personality of God. And therefore it says, the Srimad Bhagavatam is the literary incarnation of God, and it is compiled by Srila Vyasadeva, the incarnation of God. It is meant for the ultimate good of all people, and it is all successful, all blissful, and all perfect. All successful. Everybody wants success. But the thing is, they do not understand that there is no success in the material world. There's no success. Whatever you achieve, what is your success? Even if you become the brightest, most intelligent, wealthiest, you still have to get old, diseased, and die. Even if you achieve any kind of material acquisition, you will have to give it up. So the first thing that one must do to approach Srimad Bhagavatam is one must be totally materially exhausted. In order, that is the only real qualification for approaching the Bhagavad, is that one should be exhausted of all material acquisitions. Just like I said yesterday, this paripashena, sevaya. One should be free from all unwanted anattas within the heart, all these dirty things, all these ideas. Therefore it says, savai pamsam paradhamma. Yato bhakti roksache, ahoitikiya pratiyata. That this supreme, the supreme benediction to all humanity, the supreme benefit for all humanity, is by that which man attains to transcendental loving service to the glorious Lord. Isn't it, Ravi? That is the supreme benediction. Why? Why is that the supreme benediction, Ravi? That one attains to transcendental loving service to the glorious Lord. Why is that the supreme benediction? Mandy? Exactly. It is our eternal, natural position. So therefore, it's like returning liquidity to water. Just like Prabhupada gave the example, if you have an ice block, by association with the sun, it becomes liquefied. So similarly, all the living entities in the material world, they're carrying around this dry, hard-hearted heart. Their heart is like marble. In the material world, our heart becomes very dry, very marbleized. All our liquidity, all our fluency is gone. We're not fluent as people. We're not fluently emotional. We're very much caught up on the mental platform, physical platform. So therefore we can't relate with each other because our only business is exploiting. You see, we want to exploit. So there is no love in the material world because of this ice coating, just like this nature of the material world is exploitation. So our heart becomes like rock, like hard, hard-hearted. Through so many billions of births, if you look at all the species, what is their business? Accumulation for exploitation, isn't it? You find the ant, he's carrying his little bit of sugar. You find the birds are running after their bit of grain. You find the cockroach is running after his piece of rubbish in the kitchen. You find the hog is running after some stool in the gutter. You find that the elephant is running after some female elephant or something. You look at all of them. They're all doing the same thing. They're all trying to accumulate to exploit. And human form of life, which is the beauty, the excellency of manifestation, is completely spoiled because they are artificially misdirected. They're misdirected. People are misdirected towards things which are completely non-satisfactory to the heart. They will not melt the heart. No matter how many televisions you buy, it will not make you love more. No matter how big a house or how much money you got in the bank, it doesn't make you love anymore. It doesn't increase your loving propensity. Does it? It doesn't increase. The actual things that increase your propensity is association with other conscious living beings. You see? Association. So therefore, if you have a little child, it increases your loving propensity because you have to love the child or the wife like that. So that's why sometimes devotees feel a little inadequate. They want to have a wife or a child. Isn't it? Because we want to love. Nobody loves me, Prabhu. I need to get married. Nobody loves me. Isn't it? That's how we always want to be loved and to love someone. So therefore, in the material world, everybody wants to increase their love. So they need to take shelter. We take shelter for loving rasa. We want to have this rasa, reciprocation of consciousness. So therefore, we're looking, but we are going to the unconscious. Because that woman's body is made up of unconscious matter. Therefore, we're trying to squeeze out some love. You see? That is why the proof of that is when the soul has left the body, we don't want to try to love it anymore. Nothing more to squeeze out, is there? If you carry your wife around with you a few years after she's dead, she'll start falling apart. You just pull her out the door and the arm's there. Next minute, the head drops off during dinner. You see? So the point is that there's nothing more to get there because matter has cheated us. You see? This is the beauty of Maya. She creates this phantasmagoria. She has the wonderful power of creating animation in the inanimate. You see, this is what Maya is. Maya means to make it that which is not, means that we are looking for animation, but we are trying to find it in the inanimate substance, such as earth, water, etc., etc. So the point is that Srimad Bhagavatam is full of animation. It is full of animation because it is the animated pastimes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Bhagavan Krishna. Therefore, if we are also animated towards Krishna, then there will be perfect reciprocation. In other words, instead of trying to manipulate or to bring about some sort of superior situation in the inferior environment, all that Srimad Bhagavatam is telling us is move towards the superior environment through sound. Sound is the carrier which can carry the subtle to the higher plane. That is why sound is so very, very important. So very, very important because it is our transport. It's our airplane back to Godhead. So therefore, we have to drink deep this sound vibration of Srimad Bhagavatam. And that sound, because it is Sapta Brahman, that sound is coming from the transcendental plane. It is something which is descending down. It is not ascending. We are not trying to move to the unlimited by using limited vehicle. No, this unlimited vehicle, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, has come personally in sound incarnation in order to deliver each and every one in Kali Yuga, to take them back to home, back to Godhead. And just in case people didn't get the message, then he came personally as Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. You see, the Lord is so kind, Krishna is so kind. He's so very, very kind that even he was worried that I've given the Srimad Bhagavatam, I've given this Bhagavad Gita, I've given all these literatures, but these people are so foolish. They may miss that thing, they may not take it, they may not actually get the benefit. So I will come myself and drown them. You see, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to drown them because in order to read, be attracted to the Bhagavatam, you need some purification. And that is the chanting of Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So there, Namo Mahavadandayate, Krishna Prema Pradayate. By constantly chanting the holy names of the Lord, then the Chaitanya Dhavana Marjanam, the dust is gradually removed. Then attraction to the Supreme Personality of Godhead comes. Only when we remove this dust. Otherwise, we are constantly distracted. We're not attracted. We are distracted. Distraction is there because Maya is always trying to distract us. No, there's much more important things to do than read Bhagavatam. You know, there's really so many things you should be doing. Bhagavatam can wait. Best to read it about 9:15 at night. That's the best time to read Bhagavatam because then you'll fall asleep after 3 verses and you'll dribble all over your Bhagavatam. That's generally what you end up doing, isn't it? You get all these big aspirations. I'm going to read the Bhagavatam cover to cover. I'm going to learn verses like anything. And then you come back and the devotee's like, just dribble all over the Bhagavatam. You know, Maya's got him again. So generally, the Prabhupada says that the Maya's potency is to cover over and to drag down. So as soon as you pick up the Bhagavatam, you want to sleep. If you go out, I guarantee you try something. You pick a Bhagavatam up, go in your room, try and read it by sitting down by reading and see how long you last. But you go out and get a newspaper, even if it was 1 in the morning and you'd only had 2 hours sleep the night before, you could read it from cover to cover, isn't it? You could read it from cover to cover and you'd be all excited about absolutely nothing. You'd be all excited about things which are absolutely about nothing. You know, something like, so-and-so scored a goal from 20 yards and the crowd were jumping up and down. Someone fell on the pitch and crushed his head on a lawnmower. You know, something completely ridiculous. And you go, wow, that was really interesting. What's next? What's on the next page? You see? But then Srimad Bhagavatam, you pick it up and immediately, all learned problems. So that's the nature of Maya, you see? She doesn't want to get you. You're almost there. But you can't get there. You see, this is how she keeps you away from Krishna. You know, so many times we go to read Bhagavatam, so many distractions. So therefore we need to cleanse the heart so that there's actually a hankering. That's when we develop a little ruchi, a little taste. So we have to try and develop a taste for hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam, chanting the holy name. These are the things that will take us back to home, back to God. This is our ticket. This is our visa We need visa. This is our visa to get us back to Godhead. So all these other things, they are secondary. We must develop a taste for hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam, but we must develop a taste for surrendering to the lotus feet of the great acharyas, such as Sudha Goswami, Sukadeva Goswami, Srila Prabhupada, all these great acharyas. Because they will reveal the Bhagavatam. They are living Bhagavatams. Srila Prabhupada was a living Bhagavatam. You see? Living Bhagavatam means that he has nothing to do with the material world. He is with Krishna, face to face. Srila Prabhupada was always with Krishna, face to face. So therefore, he is actually, when he reads about Krishna in Vrindavan, he is there with Krishna in Vrindavan. That's the difference. When we read about Krishna in Vrindavan, we're with our minds. We're not with Krishna in Vrindavan. So we have to make the mind into Vrindavan. Okay, we'll stop now because it's a little late. So, any questions?
You mentioned earlier in the class about by studying the Vedas, you would find Krishna.
No, I didn't say you won't, but it's very difficult. It's not so easy. Krishna is actually hidden. He's in the Vedas, and he's to be known by the Vedas. But at the same time, he's also, by his mystical power, he remains hidden. He doesn't reveal himself just by studying. But he is there. The whole Vedas are all about Krishna. But at the same time, if you notice in the schools of study in India, practically very small percentage know that actually Krishna is the end of all Vedic knowledge. You know? Very few. So, actually to find Krishna, you have to find Krishna's devotee. That is the point. You will find Krishna when you find Krishna's devotee. Because Krishna can be only revealed through his devotees. He reserves that right. He cannot be approached directly. He cannot approach Krishna directly. It's not possible. You have to go through the devotees of Krishna, the Bhagavat. So you have to find the person Bhagavat. That is why we're reading the commentary, because that is the person Bhagavat. That commentary of Srimad Bhagavatam is Srila Prabhupada. So we're always approaching the Bhagavatam through the purport, through the spiritual master. We don't go directly. See, if Prabhupada said this means this, that's what it means. We don't have any other thing to add or to subtract.
So, what if someone from an academic point of view studies Srila Prabhupada's books, they're hearing from the authorized devotee, and the beginning process is actually devotional service, would it depend on the mental attitude or would it be a benefit?
The benefit of reading Bhagavatam, I mean, you mean with Prabhupada's commentaries or just?
Yeah.
If you read Srimad Bhagavatam with just Prabhupada's commentaries, that's alone enough to take you back to Godhead. Because you are going through the pure devotee. And Prabhupada actually, when he wrote these books, these are his mercy. This is his mercy. Prabhupada is personified in his books. So therefore, there's no difference between Prabhupada's commentaries in one sense and Srila Prabhupada. These are all absolute things. The pure devotee is non-different from the pastimes of Krishna because he is part of the pastimes. Just like Srila Prabhupada's pastimes, they're Srimad Bhagavatam. They're just the same as Srimad Bhagavatam. Because everything Prabhupada did is connected with Sri Bhagavan, Krishna. So therefore, everything that Prabhupada did, every act he did, every move he made, every word he spoke, is all Bhagavatam. Just as we're reading about the sages of Namisharanya, that's also Srimad Bhagavatam. But all it is about sages sitting around listening to a book. So it doesn't seem very spiritual. But because it's connected with Krishna, therefore it's absolute. It's absolute. Therefore by just mentioning the fact that these sages were all situated in Namisharanya, that is 100% spiritual conversation. So that's the point. It's not a material, it's not dealing with a material subject matter. And therefore, everything in the Bhagavatam is 100% spiritual. Even if sometimes it doesn't appear that way. Because it's just like the same with sound, transcendental sound. Krishna's name is not different from him. But you may not be able to appreciate that. Sometimes you chant and you feel completely mundane because you're not actually appreciating the sound. Similarly with the Srimad Bhagavatam and similarly with the pastimes of the pure devotees. Just like Chaitanya Charitamrita. Chaitanya Charitamrita is the pastimes between Lord Chaitanya and his devotees. Some of it's very technical. You know, like they went here, they did this, they did that. So you may think, well, what's this got to do with the soul and its relationship with Krishna? But it's all transcendental knowledge. It's all transcendental because it's dealing with the activities between Krishna and his devotees. And that's what the Bhagavatam is. The Bhagavatam, as it says here in the purport, Prabhupada says, is not different from him. Lord Sri Krishna Mahaprabhu declared that Srimad Bhagavatam is the spotless sound representation of all Vedic knowledge and history. There are selected histories of great devotees who are in direct contact with the personality of God. Srimad Bhagavatam is the literary incarnation of Lord Sri Krishna and therefore non-different from him. Srimad Bhagavatam should be worshipped as respectfully as we worship the Lord. Therefore we can derive the ultimate blessing of the Lord through its careful and patient study. As God is all light, all bliss and all perfection, so also is Srimad Bhagavatam. We can have all transcendental light of the Supreme Brahman, Sri Krishna, from the recitation of Bhagavatam, Srimad Bhagavatam, providing it is received through the medium of the transparent spiritual master. So, so it says that Srimad Bhagavatam benefits from hearing Srimad Bhagavatam are the same as derived from personal presence of the Lord. It carries with it all the transcendental blessings of the Lord Sri Krishna that we can expect from his personal contact. So it's directly associating with Krishna, 100%.
Does that mean that it's a selected pastime for the devotees? And it's possible that so Srimad Bhagavatam means the pastime for the devotees of Krishna. So it doesn't necessarily mean that the Bhagavatam we have is the only Bhagavatam. I know there are other Bhagavatams, but another way of saying people say that the Bible is the Bible, that's it, it can't be changed, or it's going to be like that forever. But the Bhagavatam in the future might be like a totally different set of pastimes, couldn't it? But as long as it's the pastime of Krishna, it's the only, or does it stay the same?
Well, the thing is, the Srimad Bhagavatam is mentioned by Srila Rupa Goswami that in the, or Jiva Goswami, in the higher planets, it's something like 1 billion. Verses. Here I think it's only 18,000. Isn't it? 18,000. So the actual, when you go to the higher planets, if you ever go there, then you can read the billion verses. Srimad Bhagavatam.
It's more passive.
Well, it must be if it's a billion, isn't it? I mean, 18,000 and a billion means there must be other pastimes there. There's unlimited pastimes of Krishna. Unlimited. There's no limit. Because there's unlimited universes and Krishna is appearing unlimitedly in unlimited universes, eternally. So, that's a lot of pastime.
Is it especially a curse
that people
are deaf and
something like that?
You can't hear sound.
That's definitely a curse. Yeah. Well observed, right?
how can they
can't hear any sound. They can chant in their mind. We have deaf people come to the manor. Yeah, it's a whole deaf group. Isn't it? They still chant and hear. It's not just through the ears you can hear. You know? I think they have things like Braille now also. Braille? You hold it like this and you can read it like that. We should make a Braille Bhagavatam. This is a joke for you, Ravi. Yeah, no, they come to the manor, many deaf people. They benefit. Sometimes they benefit more because there's no distraction. But you can chant in the mind. Japa means in the mind. The main thing is you think of Krishna. Man mana bhava ma bhato. You always think of me, Krishna says. So if you're thinking of Krishna, then that's the highest. So sometimes deaf people, they can think easier because there's so little distraction. So if they're meditating on Krishna, they can see the form of Krishna. And they can actually, they can read, no? Deaf people can read, so. Mm-hmm. I was thinking of blind people, I think, with Braille. And blind. But deaf, yeah, can read. They can just read. You can chant in there, in the mind. It's actually superior. Chanting in the mind is higher. And, because that's a higher level of meditation. Usually we don't do it because we get distracted. Because Prabhupada always was chanting. You can see he was chanting all the time. And he wouldn't know. Hmm, especially in Dublin. Yeah. Well, 500 years is not the beginning. Lord Krishna compiled the Srimad Bhagavatam through Veda Vyasa at the beginning of Kali Yuga, 5,000 years ago. Lord Chaitanya appeared 500 years ago. So he came to inaugurate the Sankirtan movement. Presumably the Lord felt that that was the best time to introduce the Sankirtan movement. So that is the, Prabhupada says, is the beginning of 10,000 years of what we call the Golden Age within the Kali Yuga. In other words, there's a period within the Kali Yuga, because the Kali Yuga goes on for 420,000 years or something. So there's a period of 10,000 where it's a Golden Age. And it's like the last chance to get out. It's the last chance. If you don't take this, you've had it, basically. Because there's 5,000 years where it peaks and 5,000 where it declines. And after that, that's it. Very hard to get out. So you've got that time to get out. Don't make it after that. And you've got to wait around till old Kalki comes and chops your head off. Huh? Unmotivated.
Yeah, unmotivated.
You think so?
I think
see, motivation is something which is an internal thing in a person. Now, motivation can also be the aspiration for a heavenly emancipation. In other words, you may feel that, oh, I want to get out of here, and I'd rather go to heaven, to be honest. But that's nothing to do with God. What's heaven got to do with God? I mean, you go to heaven to enjoy it. So really, you know, the idea of going to a place where there's beautiful gardens and lakes and you have little wings and you flutter around and play harps and things like that. It's, you know, it's a nice idea, but it's got absolutely nothing to do with God whatsoever. Because, you know, there are many places in the universe where you can enjoy all that and more. So the point is that it's not saying that they're not sincerely aspiring for God. There are many monks who are very sincere. But there are also many that are just really trying to find out of what you call frustration of life, trying to find some other kind of escape, really. It's a kind of escape idea that they can go somewhere or achieve something. So within Dharma, within religion, there are many different sub-religions. What we call sub-religion means where they're not directly related to our loving relationship with God. They're more related to aspiring after some kind of elevation. That's why we have moksha, liberation or something like that. Now within the monasteries and within the Christian religion, there are some very, very sincere people who are devotees. They are definitely devotees. And they are aspiring to love God. And there are others who are really kind of like pretty covered over. I've lived in monasteries myself in the sense that, so I know what goes on. So there's a kind of a mixed bag of people. There's some who come out of the material world out of distress, and they're very frustrated, and they come into monasteries because everything was so hard and so difficult in the material world. So they go to the monastery and they try to rid themselves of their sins and try to achieve some sort of upliftment. So it's very hard to generalize. But there are devotees. I mean, anyone who is aspiring to love God is a devotee. Simple as that. That is the religion means to love God. So those people who are trying to love God, then gradually by purification, they'll come to a platform where they can actually understand God, or hear about God, or get to know about God. But there's also a lot of contaminations in religions where they are materially motivated. They're motivated for some sort of release or some sort of always asking God for things. And they're trying to get things from God or to exploit God in some way. So depending on the quality of the worshipper, God recipient, Krishna says, I reward them accordingly as they come to me. As they approach me, I give them their reward. So we try to encourage everyone. Even amongst devotees, there's many mixed devotees. Prabhupada says there's 82 or I don't know how many different types of devotees. And they're all mixed up with the modes. Some devotees are in the mode of ignorance. Some are in the mode of passion, mixed passion, ignorance, goodness. Some are not even devotees. So it's all different types. It's not that just because we put on a dhoti or a tilak and live in the temple, I'm a devotee. It's not so easy. Actually, a devotee is very, very rare. We're aspiring to become devotees. That's our position. And until we are free from all material contamination, then we cannot actually call ourselves devotees. We're aspirants. We're neophytes. Neophyte devotees. Because we haven't got any love, unless we've got love for Krishna. That's what devotee means, one who loves Krishna. There's no other meaning to the word in the true sense, because devotion means love. And one who's a devotee is one who loves Krishna. So if you still love your body or your friends or your country or society or your false ego or your bank account or your wife or husband or children or whatever, if you still love any of these things, then the purity of love for Krishna has not taken place. Let's finish now. Last question from the group.
Well, I have a short comment and a short question. This video is describing about going to heaven and playing the harp and playing the harp. I just noticed that a lot of the Christmas decorations in the church were these little angels and harp. Nobody stops to think, you know, what is that? Where did that idea come from? The question was, is Srila Vyasadeva Vishnu Tattva?
He's empowered. Empowered. Shaktivesha. Any other questions?
Several people said in the class that one girl about her and how we have to be, even though there's only going to be 10,000 years gone very suddenly, if we don't sort of make it out of this lifetime, and say if we go to heaven first, then because the time scale there is different, and even if we think, oh, I'll just go there for one month and come back, and it might be over.
Yeah.
But the thing is, if
we're in the heavenly
first,
at the wrong time.
If we're in the heavenly first, and then the glorious Sankhan moon is really taking fire here, we're not here about it.
Up there?
Yeah. We think of seeing all the great glorious moon. We're not in the present.
It's a very hypothetical question. You mean you'd be up in heavenly planets and you'd be thinking about Dublin and...
Oh, no.
I think I'll shoot down again.
if this movement is the next 10,000 years, especially like I said, the next 5,000 years, it's going to be very much like the whole world, you know, a lot of it is going to be, you know, engaged in Krishna consciousness. Then surely if we're in the heavenly planet, we stay out of the heavenly planet, and then you know, it's just the demigods of the heavenly planet, they like look down and they hear about the glories of the devotees and they share flowers. And so we do not then like sort of be seeing what was happening because it's going to be a big thing. And being attracted and maybe not helping.
How do you know you're going to the heavenly planet?
I know, this is
well, put it this way, Ravi. If you go to the heavenly planets and the Harinam's going on down there and you want to join it, I'm sure Lord Krishna will let you. But in the meantime, I would target yourself to go back to Godhead.
Yeah.
And try not to get stuck on the heavenly planets. Because even if you're up there and there was Harinam's going on the earth and they were having a great time and you wanted to join them, and say you couldn't, then you'd be stuck. So you'd miss out on the whole thing. And then you might be born again when it's all over. And Lord Chaitanya's movement's gone and everything's over and people are eating their children. So the main thing is, what that goes on in the heavenly planets, I wouldn't worry about. I'd worry more about getting out of the whole thing altogether. Because Prabhupada says, this material world is a toilet. You go in, do your business and get out. But don't try to think the next door neighbor's got a better toilet and I should move into their toilet.
No,
anywhere you go, it's all a big toilet. And get out of it. It stinks. From the highest planets to the lowest. But Prabhupada did mention that in the heavenly planets, sometimes the demigods are praying to take birth in Kali Yuga. So that they, but they're praying to take birth in Kali Yuga so that they can actually take the benefit of Lord Chaitanya's movement. But whether they take birth or not, that I don't know.
Yeah. It's a little bit like if one, something said to anybody, you have to end up there. And then would they not be able to, not come down here, but would not benefit them also by like hearing it? Like, I mean, surely like the devotees that are going to be here in a couple of thousand years will be just as glorious pastime as like the machine back then. So would it not be that then, you know, that they're actually hearing about it?
I honestly haven't got a clue. What they hear about on the heavenly planets, I haven't a clue. And that's the truth.